You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Hey, thanks for being here. This is the Save the Marriage Podcast, the podcast designed to help you save your marriage by giving you the information you need. And I'd come at this in a couple of ways. One is sometimes I do the teaching myself, but sometimes I like to bring someone in, and today is one of those days. Today I get to bring in Annette Carpian. Annette is one of my team of coaches. In fact, she was one of my early coaches, has been with me since we added on a coaching team. And Annette is a top-notch coach. I love to have conversations with Annette. We have a weekly call with all of the coaches and really enjoy hearing all of them and certainly enjoy hearing Annette. She's an excellent coach, and I think you're going to love hearing this conversation I have with her, because what we're talking about is what happens, as I describe it, as going from an acute, a chronic okay to an acute in trouble. What happens when a marriage, you know, is at that place where it's just not where you want it to be, and then all of a sudden it hits the crisis moment when you know you're in trouble. And what do you do to come back from that? Now, here's the really cool thing. Annette has actually been there. She was in a relationship, as she'll talk about, that she had thought about leaving her marriage and getting out of her marriage, and she's still happily married to that same guy. And they have what she refers to as a juicy relationship. You're going to love this interview. So now let me bring Annette in, and Annette will tell us more about her background, and then we'll get into how you can get out of your stuck place in your thinking, how you can get out of that stuck place in your relationship. So let's go now to my discussion with Annette. Annette, thanks so much for being here.
I'm really delighted, Lee.
Annette, it's always good, I think, for people to kind of understand, since coaching is a kind of an interesting place to be, how people got there. And so why don't you spend just a little bit of time talking about how you got into, how you got to here in life, and also how you got to here as a coach.
Yeah, I'd love to tell. I'd love to tell you. So here I am at 62 and feeling really vibrantly alive and well. And my marriage now of 42 years is just thriving, just delicious and juicy. Those are two of my favorite words.
We'll get more into that in a little bit.
It wasn't always that way at all. You know, I almost gave up several times much earlier in our life together. Mm-hmm. And so that actually is, that personal lesson has really helped me in my coaching to help people to see possibility for themselves, because we all struggle and cope. So in my marriage, you know, early on, I especially struggled. My husband was, you know, happy, didn't know there was, never got that there was any problems. That's not how I felt. And I was really very unhappy. And after our second son was born, I was seriously thinking of leaving. Hmm. And just lo and behold, somebody recommended a coach to me. Now, this is over 20 years ago. And so I said, okay. And I realized that I was very much in like victim consciousness. Hmm. He's not doing this for me. It was very much blame oriented. And I didn't really have a sense of my own either responsibility or my own power to positively influence. Hmm. So I lived for many years, you know, being pissed off. Excuse my language. And blaming. Now, we had basically a good marriage. There was no infidelity. There was trust. But it was just personality differences, some value differences. But just the normal stuff of life. At the time, it seemed so big, the differences between us. And I found through coaching that I learned about that, hey, I could be a positive influence in here. And I actually learned some tools. I gained some other perspective. And at the same time, I was also immersed in a lot of spiritual teachings that really, really helped me mostly. Not so much my marriage directly, but me personally, how to be, instead of saying calm, I would have said centered. And, you know, learning, starting to take emotional responsibility, learning how to release upsets. And so I learned many things that really helped along the way. And then our marriage really started growing a lot and getting a lot more satisfying, until where people started saying, coming to us, then going, wow, how did you know, you guys look happy. How do you get, like, some people have not experienced actual happiness. Of course, there's that love drug stage in the beginning, but once that wears out, you know, what's left? Most people are left to struggle and cope. And I realized, yeah, you know, we have something. But I didn't exactly know what it was. So, you know, I became the go-to person for family and friends. You know, if there was something going on, it may have been with their spouse, it may have been other people, but I was the person that people came to. And I found that I really loved doing that, even though I don't have specific training. And then I had a corporate career. You know, I was doing corporate training and building websites, or actually training software. So a lot of corporate work for many, many years. But at the same time, in the back of my head, there kept on being this like nagging voice, like, okay, Annette, what's next? You know, something about a legacy, feeling like I really needed to make a difference somewhere, and not really, but I was making a good living and I wasn't about to quit a good job for something. But then I discovered the field of coaching, and I said, okay, well, why don't I take courses? Why don't I learn about this? And I'll figure out later what to do about it. Maybe on the weekend, I'll be able to coach somebody. I didn't plan it to be a career. But I went through training, and then I discovered the Relationship Coaching Institute. And I said, oh my God, this is really what I want. So I got trained as a coach and a relationship coach working with couples, singles and couples. And I said, oh my God, this is like, I have found my passion. And then over the years, then I was invited to join the faculty. And so I've been doing that for 7 years now, training other coaches in working effectively, with couples to help them really thrive.
So let's go back just a little bit. What you highlighted an interesting thing. At one point in your own marriage, you were the dissatisfied one, and your husband was he was okay.
Mm-hmm.
So as things changed, did he also identify that things were maybe not as good as he had originally thought?
Well, I would say it took him a little bit to really get, like, okay, things being okay was good enough. You know, we had so much else going. We had kids, we had our careers, we had long commutes, we had money issues. There's all the mountain of life in front of you. So if some part of your life was stable, you know, like it was okay, that was good enough. You know, so I think that's how my husband kind of held it. But for me, emotionally, I didn't feel like I was getting my needs met all that well. Not badly. It was never an unhealthy marriage. It just wasn't juicy. It wasn't alive and vibrant. It was okay.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing, how many marriages are on that chronic we'll survive kind of mentality. You know, things aren't horrible. Things aren't great, and then somebody along the way is kind of going, you know what, this really just isn't feeding me. And so it goes from chronic to acute, and that's when we often find them. But that's a story that you told a couple of times. That happened in your marriage, and it also happened in your job. You had a comfortable job. It was chronic.
Yeah, I had a decent job. I can't say it was hugely satisfying in
Right.
terms of like life purpose, but it was a job that was good enough.
And that's so then the chronic, and then something along the way, usually that meaning purpose makes it acute, and so you go, okay, now, and that's what springs us in. You know, it a lot of times people can exist in that okayness, and the risk, you know, it's kind of the risk of each end. They're afraid of going for something better, but they're also afraid of losing what they've got.
Yes, but I have to admit, there was a piece that actually was my kick in the butt, which was a pink slip.
Ah, that's what makes it acute.
Yes.
And we see a lot of marriages where they come to us because of a pink slip. And something has done that. So that pushes you into a different place. And I know that you have 7 secrets to well-being, to vitality and to happiness. And in some ways, that puts us back to that question. You know, there's that place of okayness that a lot of us have, which is really not okay. Mm-hmm. It's just day to day, you get up and you do it again. And you're trying to present that there's another possibility, both in relationships and in life. Mm-hmm. Talk some about those, maybe those, even those secrets, and tie them into how that might fit into a juicier marriage.
Uh-huh. Okay. So first of all, there's just a sort of a possible model to look at your marriages as a three-legged stool. So, you know, you yourself are one of those legs, your spouse is another of the legs, and the third leg is your marriage, the us. And each one of those legs needs to be strong and vibrant to have something sturdy that can, you know, that works well. And so we need to be taking good care of ourselves. We need to be taking good care of each other. And most of the time, we're not doing well with any of them. Mm-hmm. We're doing okay. We may be doing okay. So building self-love and self-worth, I think, are just really strong keys to everything working well. Because if you don't really believe that you are worthy to have somebody love you fully, then you'll probably be sabotaging and undermining that.
Say a bit more about that. That's a very important point.
Well, you know, self-love, self-respect, self-worth. You know, all three things that are components that are somewhat distinct but all very related to each other. Mm-hmm. It's like a foundation point. Maybe you think of it as a set point, like where your norm is for your own well-being. If your well-being is not in a place that's really satisfactory to you, the first place I would look is really at your own self-worth and your own self-love. And that can change over time, or it can stay the same through most of your life. So one of the things that used to happen for me, and many people can probably relate to it, is that voice, that inner voice that just berates you. Like, I would wake up in the morning, and the very first thing that, as soon as I was getting out of bed, the very first thing would be a voice that would tell me, you know, what a loser you are, what, you know, you don't get done nearly what you said you were going to get. Set my day. You know, that would, like, and if not, you know, sometimes I'd be fighting against that. Well, I'll tell that voice I can be better. So a lot of internal battle. Mm. And that plagued me for a long time in my life. And then what I did was, when I discovered something that, you know, now it's like, duh, Annette, you'd never realized this before, but it never really dawned on me that I could choose my thinking. Rather than fight my thinking, I could choose what I wanted to be with me. And I learned how to actually let go of that, or like dismiss those thoughts that used to just sabotage my day a lot of the time. So this tool, you might say, or this understanding that you can actually choose your thinking and you can choose your emotions. For me, that made the world of difference.
So how did you get out of that battle? I mean, I think most people wake up in the morning going, I didn't do enough. I've got so much to do. I'm not going to get it done. And in some way, they're basically saying, I'm not good enough. Mm-hmm. I'm not worthy enough. I'm not lovable. I mean, those are what's behind that.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you get away from the struggle? Because I think people listening are going to be saying, how can I wake up and choose my thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
We all feel like they just come to us. So what was that? What's the shift?
Uh-huh. Well, the first thing that happened was actually I was at a women's retreat. And we did this process of every one of the women, we would write, you know, after it was at the end when we'd gotten to know each other and got connected with each other through the weekend. And we would write each other little notes with affirmations about something that we saw about the other person that we really valued, or something we learned from the other person. And I got the things that people said about me were things I never saw in myself. And they were such affirmations. I actually carried them around in my wallet for about 12 years. And I would look at them like every day. And I would like, wow, people see that in me. Yeah, I do have that. Yeah. And then that opened the door for me to choose to really live into those. And so actually what I initially did was I kept those notes, those post-it notes, or note cards, right next to my bed. Huh. So that as soon as I woke up and there was that, you know, that voice, I would say, no, not so. And I would read aloud those words. And I said, I wonder if that's another part of me that has not been given enough voice. And so I just chose that voice. And then I realized, you know, like I could just swish away the voice that I don't want. Now, what I've learned is that you don't want to fight with. You don't want to fight with your thinking, with your thoughts, because that takes a lot of emotional energy.
And usually whatever we struggle with tends to stick around.
Yes.
We don't get rid of it. When we fight with it, we're giving it energy, even if we don't want to.
Exactly.
Okay, so I've kind of got this cheat sheet in front of me. And so I know that number three of your steps is training your mind and emotions. And you talk about stinking thinking.
Yes, and emotion commotion.
And my guess is that's what you're talking about right now.
Yeah, very much. So when we have thoughts, they tend to be repetitive thoughts. They're not thoughts that just come up once. Or if they come up once, we give them energy, mm-hmm. and they come back again, and when they come back again. So whatever thinking that you have disempowers you, or disempowers what you want for your life, that's what I would call stinking thinking.
And how does that fit into a relationship, a marriage, or a sustained relationship?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, as we all know, life is going to continually hand us challenges. stuff. You know, first of all, we'll have the good things, the wonderful things in our lives. And then we'll have the stuff that we don't like, or we don't want, we don't choose. And so when stuff happens, we actually have a lot more choice about how we're going to be with the what happened than we realize that we have. So let's just take an example. Okay. In fact, I had a couple like this. So he would come home from work, and he'd put his stuff down, walk right past his wife, walk right past the kids, walk into his den, close the door, sit down with a beer, and watch TV for an hour. Mm. And so for her, of course, she made judgments about that. You know, she was hurt, and she made all kinds of judgments about that. Like, he takes me for granted. He doesn't love me. He's so selfish. He's so self-absorbed. And those would be the beliefs that she would have, that she grew over time to really have, which, of course, builds resentment. So, and he, on the other hand, would, you know, then he'd come out of his cave, you know, about an hour later, and then he would be ready to relate to his kids, to his wife. He'd be, you know, looking for a hug, and, you know, like, yeah, right. So for her, you know, living that past hour and all the times that happened in the past that he did that, you know, the resentment that she would build. So what she had going on was what I would call stinking thinking. Now, there's, of course, the hurt of feeling neglected, feeling taken for granted. But then that becomes your truth because you allow it to fester and then you react based on it.
So in that case, you know, she had created this belief structure, mm-hmm. Based on what she was reading into his behavior.
Right. Exactly.
And so, you know, he's coming in going, I need to cool off and then reengage. Mm-hmm. But in the midst of that, she's ramped up. Mm-hmm. She's activated her very fear. In fact, you know, I would say that it ended up being a self-fulfilling prophecy for her, what she believed, because then when he came out, she reacts. He's going, well, you know, who wants to be around this?
Right.
And in the end, they play off each other with false beliefs both ways.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
So that's the stinking thinking that actually ends up being both of theirs.
Yeah.
That sounds like you talk about stuck energy. Mm-hmm. Does that fit into that process? I mean, did this couple get, were they stuck with it?
Oh, completely. Yeah, completely. And I don't want to forget, though, to talk about the way out of the process. So I would say for her, she got into stinking thinking, mm-hmm. meaning repeating and indulging the thinking over and over, which, you know, grows into stuck energy. Mm-hmm. So let me just say a little bit more about that. So something happens or doesn't happen in your relationship. You don't get validation. You don't get attention. Or you get, you know, your spouse being angry at you, pissed off, whatever happens. So there's the what happens. Then, and there's how you interpret it. And then there's the feeling that arises in your body from it. So maybe it's in your gut. Maybe it's in your heart. Maybe it's in your shoulders or your chest. There's a feeling that starts living there. Mm-hmm. And then when the thinking, you know, if you don't work out what caused it, and many people don't have good tools for really working out the upset of what happened. So then they fall into a dynamic that becomes unsafe. It creates a lot of unsafety in the relationship. So for her, not knowing how to really, like, she might yell at him, she might scream, she might cry, but never having, knowing how to really, I would say the best tool would be using curiosity to find out what's going on for your spouse. But in order to be able to do that when you're hurt, you have to do a little bit of releasing on your own. Like, so I would always recommend a lot of deep breathing, inhaling, exhaling out some of the feeling, some of the emotion, soothing yourself a bit, so that you could get to an emotional place where you could have an effective conversation with your spouse about it without your emotions being, you know, all the way up there. So we need to learn how to do some self-management in order to get to the place where we can actually have a conversation that works, so that you can understand what's going on for your spouse and then doing, you know, finding some better way for both of you in a situation like that.
So with this couple, say a little bit about how you got them unstuck. How you talk about curiosity. How'd you get her to make, I'm assuming that you're dealing with her and you got her to make a shift, because he's probably okay. He's going in, taking an hour break, coming out and expecting everybody to be happy, not understanding why his wife is at that point done with him.
Mm-hmm. Well, the part for him was when he would want to make love at night. And she would totally, like, she wouldn't even be able to believe that he would even think that she would be willing to do that, given what he did. Mm-hmm. So they were in two total different universes about that.
And yet both desperate for connection.
Yes, both desperate. Desperate for connection. But the space between them became so unsafe. You know, because, like, as you pointed out, you know, when he'd come out, she'd be, like, growling at him. You know, just the look on her face. He, after a time, he got to realize, oh, I'm not going there. So he would just, you know, disconnect. Maybe he'd go over and be with the kids or do something else, but they would just be disconnected from each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he was not happy. He wasn't getting very much sex. He was really unhappy about that. And so they actually both came to me together.
Okay.
They were both unhappy. I could have worked with either of them individually, and I think it would have been very effective that way as well. But it so happened that they both came. Yeah. So what we did was, so I really, you know, I asked for the dynamic of what happened in that situation. That was, she had just mentioned that, you know, there was this many things that each of them was upset about, or that she was upset about. His was mostly this, the one thing. But, so I would just ask her about, like, that particular scenario. And so she would tell me the what. So I first asked for the what happened, just the facts, the observable facts. So she would explain what happened. I said, okay, and what did that mean to you? What did you make that mean? And that was when he doesn't love me, he takes me for granted, he's selfish, you know, all of this barrage of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, what does it seem to you is going on for him? His name was Ross. What's going on for Ross? And she you know, and she'd say, well, you know, he had a crappy day. But that doesn't excuse him, you know. So so then I said, you know, maybe can I ask Ross what's going on for him? And so for him, it was the fact that, you know, his, you know, he felt very disempowered, very unhappy in his job, very, you know, unrecognized and very unfulfilled. So he felt that his job, even though it paid well, but he felt that his job was just his sacrifice for his family that he was willing to do. It was his act of love. to them. And then because he was so, and he had terrible commute, horrible commute. And so all of that together, he would feel the need to protect his wife and kids from the dragon that would come out, the ugly self that would come out, because he knew what he would be like if he needed to relate to them. And so his methodology was just to chill out, de-stress, and then he'd be okay. Mm-hmm. But she never really understood. Now, I'm not in any way excusing his behavior. I'm just understanding. And so I asked him, what would make it safer for you when you come home to be able to relate? You know, what do you need? And he said, oh, if she would just come in and give me a hug and say, I know you had a bad day, honey, and maybe give me a kiss and, you know, just a little understanding, then I could get over it faster. But part of my hour needing away was just wondering how I was going to come out the door and what I was going to find there. So he needed a little bit of empathy. And so I asked him for a request. And he said, yeah, I would love it if she would just knock on the door, ask if she could give me a hug and maybe bring me some coffee, something like that. And I asked her if she'd be willing, and she said yes. And just that little change, that little bit of understanding and empathy, changed the dynamic between them.
Hmm. You know, it's interesting when you talk about that. I talk about, you know, a lot of people say, oh, we've got these communication issues, but it's misperception issues.
Yes, exactly.
And they were misperceiving. Both were wanting the same thing, and both were telling an interesting story to themselves.
Yes.
And, you know, it's always interesting to me how easily we make ourselves the hero of our internal dialogue. You know, we're the hero of our story that we're telling. And so he's Mr. Sacrifice. I'm doing all this for the family, so all I need is this little space to get myself together so I can, you know, kind of re-enter the family. And she's going, you know, I've whatever she's been doing all day, whether it was, you know, her own job or the house and the kids or whatever, she had her own story about how she'd been doing all this for the family, and you know, all she needed was just a little reconnection. And so they're both the hero of their own story.
Yes. It's interesting, though, the hero and the victim at the same time.
It is interesting how hero in our own heads often becomes the victim, which kind of, in my mind, is related to that early thing that you talked about in your story, where you one day realized that you had some choices.
Yeah.
And that's the point when victim is out the window, when you realize that you're not stuck in the mm-hmm. process, that mm-hmm. you actually do become hero, that you actually do leave that victim behind.
Yeah.
So you talk some about being at peace with what is. That seems to me a place where that enters into that process.
Mm. Yeah. So being at peace, and I whenever I speak about that, people always have arguments, like they're ready to, like, you know, that you couldn't possibly be at peace with what is because, you know, of all these reasons. So all that means is getting in reality, into touch with what is so. Now, that does not mean being complacent. It doesn't mean giving in. It doesn't mean giving up. It's just, oh, this is what is. Now, what is there for me to do about it? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, like a story, a client that I had, she had a retail therapy problem. So whenever she was stressed, and particularly when there was an upset in her marriage, she would go out shopping. And part of what she and her husband fought about a lot was, guess what, about money and her overspending. Mm. But it was a lifelong pattern. It didn't start in their marriage. But she was really freaked out because last time they had some big fight, she went out shopping, and now the credit card was due. They couldn't afford it. You know, she really didn't have the money to pay it. And she knew her husband was going to freak out. And the cycle was going to start again. So when we started working together, and I was just working with her, getting being at peace with what is just the recognition, oh, I have this pattern. Oh, when I'm feeling stressed or I'm feeling invalidated, the way I handle it is to go shopping. Mm-hmm. So, and recognizing that and that it has a consequence to it. So rather than justifying it, being a victim, I only do that because of how you treated me, you know, that kind of thing. Like, oh, it's, you know, part of it's emotional maturity, recognizing, you know, what it is that we have to work with. You know, like taking ownership for our patterns. We all have them. Part of being human is to have patterns. Some of them are going to be good patterns, and some of them may be unhealthy patterns. So the ones that are not serving your life or marriage, to emotional maturity means like really getting in touch with what is. Oh, I have this pattern that's really destructive. I need to do something about it.
Which for me is that beginning point of responsibility.
Mm.
Not fault, but responsibility. I remember Thomas Leonard, who is kind of the grandfather of coaching, one of them. He talked about the present perfect, and I remember how upset people would get when he would say, you know, the present is perfect, and what he didn't mean is that it's perfect. You know, it's just what you want. It's a perfect representation of where you've been. Mm-hmm. That the present is where you are because of what's happened before, and we can either struggle against it and rail against it and be upset about that, or we can say, huh, this is where I am because of some things we choose, some things that just happened to us, but that combination, mm-hmm. and that our responsibility is not about what happens to us, but what we do about that. And that sounds a lot like finding that peace.
Yeah. So it's shifting out of reactivity into responsiveness.
Mm-hmm.
So when she has an argument with her husband, there are many other things that she could do. Mm-hmm. Her go-to thing would be go out shopping.
Mm-hmm.
But starting to learn what else she could do instead that could serve her, build her own self-worth, her own self respect, and build a healthy new pattern, and even ask for help. And so eventually what happened was when she really started owning the pattern, not as a victim, but as the person responsible that she has this pattern, then she was able to do many things. One is learn her own self-management, how to handle the stress, what learning tools, and one of the things that she did was ask for help. And her husband supported her in getting that help.
Mm.
And, you know, it started, now it's not like when someone's learning something new that they're never going to fall back into a pattern. But then you can put some things in place so for her to have some accountability, so that you I love to live into a vision of what I could, what life could be like, and you know, so this is the vision for her, is that the two of them, she and her family, really have a life they love that's healthy and emotionally solvent. That was
so she creates this vision.
Mm-hmm.
And that vision is one that is a bit aspirational.
Yes.
Pulling her to a higher point.
Mm-hmm. Right.
How did she find that vision? How did that come to her? Because it's hard when you're stuck to mm-hmm. create a vision of somewhere else to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, first, it does take some emotional maturity. You need to be, once you get present to the what is, oh, I have this pattern, and this pattern has not served us well. So I would say, well, let's imagine, and I might even take them through a little visioning, like imagine that through learning tools, learning self-management, learning other ways to feel fulfilled and happy in life, you actually mastered this. If this were no longer your problem, your issue, what would that give to your life? What would that bring to your life? Oh my God, I'd be so relieved. My husband wouldn't be so mad at me all the time. Well, great. And then if your husband were not so mad at you all the time, and if you were relieved, what would that give you? Oh my God. Maybe I could just be happy and I would have less stress. Wow. And I help her get in touch with that feeling. Then if you were happy and less stressed, what would that do for your life and your marriage? And so we keep going through that process, listening for those key words, for what is it that would be underneath that. So it's like you peel back the layers till you get to the heart and, you know, what it is that you really want. And so that becomes the words of your, the words and or images of your vision. Mm. And so that, then you just use that as your like your mantra. What you say to yourself, that's what helps you move towards that. That's the possibility for your life.
And so, you know, you talk about, it's interesting, what you're wording is not make a vision. It's focus mm-hmm. on your vision and values. And which, you know, having done some work with businesses, I know how many times that I've watched a business come up with a vision statement or a mission statement, and they print it off on their stuff, and then it gets tucked into a drawer or hung on a nice sign that's behind the door or somewhere that's never lived out. But your point is not so much about making that vision. You talked mm-hmm. about the process of getting there, but it's about focusing on your vision.
Yeah. And it actually becomes like your mantra for your life. It's what you repeat. So initially, what I have people do just as their assignment is to actually, like, I might take them through a little bit of an exercise, like first thing in the morning. You know, just do a little bit of shoulder shrugs, stretching, deep breathing. And then just take a moment to actually vision what it is that they want for their life, to say those words and to feel them, to get in touch with it, so that it's not some intellectual exercise. It's actually a feeling-oriented. And so they repeat it to themselves quite a bit, and I also encourage them to write it numerous places so that they see it a lot.
You know, that it's interesting. That's such a, we started with the, you wake up in the morning with the lists of what you've done wrong and where you've fallen short and how you're not deserving and all those other messages that run through our head. And looking at a vision is a far different exercise. And I start thinking about what I know about what most people do in the morning. You know, the alarm goes off. So first they're already startled awake, and then they reach over and they get up and grab their phone and check the email and think about what the unanswered things of the day. And then they go through their to-do list and think about what's not going to get done. And they think about what they should be doing. And so what you're proposing is a bit of a habit change. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you suggest that somebody get to the place where they're ready for that habit change?
Mm. Well, before I speak to the part about get ready for the habit change, I just want to say about habit change in general. So you know, there's all kinds of research about this. And my understanding is that it takes like 40 days of a repeated new process to in order to change a pattern. And most people, not knowing that, try something for two or three times, and then they fall back into their old patterns. Mm-hmm. And most spouses don't believe that their partner is actually changing, because in the past they did something new. Maybe they washed the dishes when they didn't do it before, or they, you know, did something better a few times. But without a having just a recognition of what it takes in order for that to change. So an intentionality. So having a any kind of change, habit change, takes intentionality. What is it that I want to have happen?
You know, one of the things that I always try, when somebody, we hear it all the time, both you and I hear it all the time of, you know, I'm going to change this, I'm going to be a different person, on and on they go. And one of the things I'll always want to explain to people is, if you're going to change a habit, you are changing the wiring of your brain. You're re-networking. And so if you want to add a habit, all you're doing is building that new neuronal pathway. If you mm-hmm. want to change a habit, you're extinguishing one pathway and you're building another. And so mm-hmm. it's faster to take on something that's completely new
right.
Than it is to change something. So, you know, if you've got your habit of getting up in the morning and going through the crash course of how horrible the day is going to be, mm-hmm. you got to stop that to change it for this, looking at your value statement. And I think what most people don't realize is that there is a brain wiring thing that it just takes time and repetition to get to. And until you do the repetition, until that neuronal pathway is built, you're always at risk of slipping out of the habit. It's not a habit yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's still out there. And you probably have the same experience where people proclaim from the hilltops how they're going to change. Mm-hmm. Only alerting their spouse to watch for where they don't change.
Right.
Yeah. And so many times people say, "What? I keep telling my spouse I'm changing. What should I do?" And I say, quit telling him you're changing and, you know, change. Uh-huh. Be the change. Yeah. Don't tell him about the change.
Yeah.
But it's good for them to know that it's not going to be, if I do this, you know, if I get up tomorrow and read my value statement, and maybe I even do that on the next day, and maybe even that third day, then I should have it down. That's not the case.
Right. You know, and with each repetition of it, like you said, you know, you're building more neural pathways.
Mm-hmm.
But in order for that one to be, that new one to be stronger than the old one, it needs, what I've heard is like 40, I don't know if it's 40 days or 40 repetitions of it consistently. So the old neural pathway still has a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
But like a weed, if it doesn't get watered, it will wither away.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't feed the other pattern, it will wither away.
Yeah.
And if you feed the other one, that will grow.
Right. Which do you want, the weed to grow or the flower to grow? Which?
Now, and just to know that, you know, when the pain of the situation that has you choosing, okay, I'm going to change, you know, whatever the pain that's, you know, giving that energy, if that painful situation starts, you know, like tampering down, it's not as painful, then it becomes much harder
mm-hmm.
for you to live that change.
Yeah.
So that's where intentionality and even accountability are really helpful, and support.
And I think it's also important for people to recognize, if you do something new, it's going to feel awkward.
Mm.
You know, you're not going to get up tomorrow and have this vision statement and feel natural reading it, and, or certainly not out loud, but, you know, mm-hmm. even reading it is going to feel awkward. And that, and what we failed, you know, we often go, oh, that's awkward, so I'm not going to do it, rather than going, oh, that's awkward, just like every new thing I do has been, and we're uncomfortable doing it. Mm-hmm. Today, I finally got to take my paddleboard out, and the place that I ended up having to launch, is not where I used to launch. The old place, they stopped allowing it. And I was sitting there reflecting on it because there's a whole process, you know. And I remember the first time I drove into this new launch place, it's at a marina, and I was uncomfortable. You know, I didn't know what was going on, and I had to ask. But after I had gone a couple of times, you know, I knew the process. I knew how to pay for my time there and where to park the car and how to launch my paddleboard. And then the interesting thing is today it was as if that was just what I do. You know, it was not like there's a whole new process I had to think through. I was like, oh, here I am, got to go pay over there, and now I'm in. And to me that, you know, it was just kind of a reminder today of that's what happens with all of us. Whenever we do something new, it's always going to feel foreign. Mm-hmm. Until it doesn't, until we do it enough times just for it to feel comfortable. It's going to be awkward and then it's going to be okay. And I think that's a really important understanding for an individual to have, but also a couple to have when they're trying to get to that juicy relationship. You know, they're used to the okay or maybe even the painful. Mm-hmm. And it's going to feel awkward to get to that new place.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, it's a good lesson for people to have that. Whenever you change something, that there's awkwardness. And the other part of awkwardness that I see is that when one changes, the other person who's not changing doesn't know how to relate to their partner anymore.
Right.
They don't know the dance.
Yeah.
They used to play a certain way, and now the partner, their spouse, isn't being reactive in the way they did. They're being more transparent, more forthcoming. They're owning up to their role. They're apologizing. And suddenly, they don't know what to do.
Which is when that awkwardness
Yes.
creates a new place for growth.
Yes.
The other person has to change their actions. And the hope. And so if you're no longer with that old okay, mm-hmm. you're finding something new, something different.
Yeah.
New dance steps.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing I find about that is that when one partner, let's say they've both been very reactive with each other and they have this, you know, these dynamics that just don't work based on misperceptions. And then one of them is really growing and stretching themselves and they're learning new ways of being. And the other person hasn't been doing that, hasn't been growing and all, they're still stuck in the way they've always been, it becomes that their partner who's growing becomes a mirror for them that becomes uncomfortable for the partner who's stuck. They, I see something happening over there with him or her, but I'm the one who's, you know, like they're really noticing themselves. And I find that it makes them very uncomfortable, but that sets the stage for the other partner to want to change something for the, you know, to come into the coaching or to work toward something better.
Which is why both you and I believe that you can work with a couple and improve, but you can also work with a person.
Yes.
So let's, just as we're kind of nearing the end here, let's talk a little bit about what a couple or a person might do as kind of some first steps to get this moving forward.
Well, they may or may not be able to do this yet, but one could speak into a vision. You know, I would really love it for both of us to feel like we're getting our needs met. You know, I'd like it for both of us to be happy. I don't know if I know how to do that, you know, how to meet your needs well. Maybe we can get some help. So I like the vision piece, even as far as you could see. I just want us to both to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the time, they're only focused on themselves,
Their
own unhappiness. So if you can speak into the both of us, that I find to be pretty powerful.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting how, as I'm playing that in my head, you know, if I were to say, I would just like to be happy, just me, you know, then I'm still stuck in victim role.
Mm.
But if I say, what I would like is for us both to be happy and satisfied in this relationship, I have gone from victim to hero, and not just hero like, oh, aren't I great, but responsible. I'm gonna say what can be done here,
mm-hmm.
And because it's speaking for the relationship. Now, where the relationship goes, you know, that that has yet to be said. You don't have control, ultimate control over that, but you do have a choice of getting out of the here's where I what I want, because when I say I want to be happy, I'm also saying I'm not happy and nothing I can do about it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So the vision statement would be a good starting point.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that you mentioned that that would be an opportunity of saying, hey, why don't we get some help for this? Mm-hmm. Annette, why don't you tell people how they can find you? And how they might...
As far as you could see, I just want us to both to be happy. Because mm-hmm. most of the time, they're only focused on themselves, their own unhappiness. So if you can speak into the both of us... That I find to be pretty powerful.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting how, as I'm playing that in my head, you know, if I were to say, I would just like to be happy, just me, you know, then I'm still stuck in victim role.
Mm.
But if I say, what I would like is for us both to be happy and satisfied in this relationship, I have gone from victim to hero. And and not just hero like, oh, aren't I great, but responsible. I'm gonna say what can be done here.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's speaking for the relationship. Now, where the relationship goes, you know, that has yet to be said. You don't have control, ultimate control over that, but you do have a choice of getting out of the here's where I what I want. Because when I say I want to be happy, I'm also saying I'm not happy and nothing I can do about it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So the vision statement would be a good starting point.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that you mentioned that that would be an opportunity of saying, hey, why don't we get some help for this?
Mm-hmm.
Annette, why don't you tell people how they can find you and how they might contact you? So, because that might be somebody might hear this and say that is. In fact, I think there'll be a number of people who hear this and say that person, I want that juicy relationship. And Annette's been through this and knows the terrain. So that's the person I want to coach. So how do they contact you?
So first, my name is Annette Carpien, C-A-R-P-I-E-N. And you can reach me at Annette, A-N-N-E-T-T-E, at couplestherapyexposed.com. Or you could call me at 610-391-1994 in the U.S. And my website is greatrelationships.com.
Okay, so Annette, you have on your website.
Yes.
You have an audio.
Uh-huh.
And so to find that, they go to that greatrelationshipscoaching.com.
That's right. GreatRelationshipsCoaching.com.
And they can get that audio.
Right. And then they just click the button to enter here. And then on the next page, they'll see that audio and they can just freely download it.
Excellent. And so if you're sitting there going, I need a coach, Annette at CouplesTherapyExposed.com. And then you can also visit and learn more about Annette at GreatRelationshipsCoaching.com.
Right. Uh-huh.
Annette, thank you so much for being here.
You're very welcome, Lee. It's been a pleasure.
We'll have you back soon.
Great.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. I hope you found that discussion helpful and something that really got you loose. Now, here's the thing. Annette is on my team of coaches. So if something really spurred that for you and you said, you know what, this is the person I need to help me with my relationship, remember, you can contact Annette just by emailing her Annette@CouplesTherapyExposed.com. That's Annette@CouplesTherapyExposed.com. And Annette is A-N-N-E-T-T-E. And you can also look at her website, GreatRelationshipsCoaching.com. That relationship with an S on the end of it, coaching.com, and get her a free audio. But if you are ready to take action and ready for a coach, you want to go ahead and email her at Annette@CouplesTherapyExposed.com. Now, I am always appreciative of you spending your time with me and with us and being here and working on your relationship. I'm always inspired by the people who continue to work on their relationship day in and day out, even when you feel like you're running up against a brick wall. You keep on doing it, and then you chip away at that wall and you break through. Now, what I'm going to ask is, would you help us? Help us spread the word about this. If you're listening through iTunes, if you can just go to iTunes and leave a review, just leave a comment, let people know about what you found out on this podcast, because that helps us help other people. We're out to help as many marriages as we can. And so if you found something beneficial in this, please go there and leave us a review. The other thing you could do is just tweet it. You know, a lot of people don't want to put it on Facebook, but if you do that, that would be great. But if you just want to tweet, if you're on Twitter and you just want to say, hey, I found this great podcast, all you have to do is write savethemarriage.com/love in your browser. That's just type it in, savethemarriage.com/love in your browser, and that'll pre-populate a tweet and let people find us that way. That's a great way of helping us spread the word. And remember, you can always find my new book by going to savethemarriage.com/Kindle. That'll take you right to the Amazon page where you can both get it in the Kindle version or to hold it in your hands in that paperback version. Okay. I wish you the best as you continue to work to save your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at savethemarriage.com.